Fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. By God, Titanic Tuesday is already here. And my God, but Titanic Tuesday last week may be the Titanicest Titanic Tuesday we have ever had. I mean, you want to talk about Titanic intellect? What happened Tuesday was not just the iceberg, it was, you know, Greenland. The American Titanic just hit Greenland. But it's still Titanic Tuesday today. And we'll be busy. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go, and you click on the tab called Chat Room if you'd like to jump into the conversation that takes place in real time in a multimedia format. This time, every evening, Monday through Friday. If you pick out a screen name and a password and jump in, you will be met by Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Steve from Georgistan, VT Blom, and, of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, folding space, has become Man Cave. Yes. And, it's just a drum loop. It kill the music, Bob. It just rolls, it just runs out, over. Yeah. I assume it's the drum loop you're talking about. There's no, it's not like there's any, see? Drum loop gone. I hope we're not talking about the Glockenspiel music over at White Rose Society. I really hope that. But anyway, it is Titanic Tuesday. And every evening we try to raise $200. This evening is no different, and it has once again been made easy. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very, very kindly indeed to our buddy Bob in Texas, who has put a $100 challenge on the table. So all we need is another $100. And that will, that's 10 at 10, 1 at 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 3 at $33.33, 25 at 4, 20 at 5, 5 at 20. Oh, I can cipher. All this has made my ciphering skills considerably better. And that's why I've taken to doing some freelance ciphering lately. If you would like to help out as far as keeping the program going goes, all you got to do is go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on Contribute, fill out the little form there. You can leave blank the one about what you do and where you do it and the address for it and all that stuff, because we don't care. I don't care. And then you just make your choice. You get to the next page, and you go either PayPal or you go credit card. And then we keep paying bills, a bunch of bills to be paid. We are at officially the middle of the month of November, and I'm kind of stunned for how we got here. But thank you very kindly, Bob. The next $100 that come in get doubled. Thank you very, very much indeed. So we've got that going for us, which is good. But I mentioned Cyphron. Let's do some of that. Based on a little bit of pushback that I'm getting about my opinion of the people who went to the polls and voted for Benito Cheeto, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, otherwise simply known as not POTUS, but POST. I really do. You know, when people object to things here, I go back and think about things and see if I was wrong in my assumptions. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's what we do as reasonably enlightened people. Homo sapiens sapiens, the thinking ape. And I did that. I re-examined some basic presumptions that I had made about the people who elected POST, and I kind of want to walk through that. I've also got some email to share from earlier in the day. You might find interesting. And a little bit of public service, because that's you know, part of the thing here. A little bit of public service. In fact, if I can get it to load, because old tired computer. Yeah, let's try it on the other one. Maybe it'll work over here. Everything old, as they say, is new again. And so, that being the case, this might come in, you know, handy.
This is Groucho Marx. A few days ago, I was talking with the Director of Civil Defense, and he told me some things that I feel everyone should know. That's why I'm speaking to you now. Did you know, for example, that your chances of surviving an atom bomb attack are excellent? It's true, but there's a big if. You must do everything possible now to help yourself and your family. Nobody else will help you. Listen, because this is important. Keep a complete first aid kit handy. Keep a closed container of drinking water in your refrigerator, enough for 3 days. Be sure you have a good fire extinguisher. Take a look around your house right now and pick out the safest spot, away from windows and doors. Make sure that every member of your family understands he is to rush to that safe spot when there's danger. I'm convinced that these precautions are necessary right now, and I hope I can convince you. They're important to your family, yourself, and your community.
Your chances of surviving an atom bomb attack are quite good, really. Didn't think we'd have to start worrying about this all over again, did you? Eh, we do. Because, you know, we've got one of those in the White House. And by one of those, I mean an idiot. But be that as it may, like I said, I've been doing some ciphering. And thank you to Reverbo, the human boy, for sending that clip along. That's, if you can't take Groucho Marx on atomic blasts seriously, who can you take, Siri? I mean, really? No, I've been doing some ciphering. So last night, in a conversation that was cut short by virtue of the end of the program, and which I wish we had had further time for, our buddy Andy, out in California, took issue with my assessment that Hillary Clinton was correct and that about half of Donald Trump's support is made up of racists, white nationalists, white supremacists, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, you know, deplorables. And because we ran out of time, I didn't get an answer as to, you know, he said, oh, it can't be that many. And I didn't get it. So I said, what if I'm right? And so that's kind of the question that I want to address. What if I'm right? And by way of looking at that, I decided to just, you know, do some basic math. I mean, I'm no good at algebra. Geometry kind of leaves me cold. Calculus and I never met. But I can just do sums pretty good. Even when they're in the millions, thanks to the power of 10. And so let's start our premise, our little thought experiment here. Let's start by rounding up. not the way the Trumpanzees want to round up people, but let's round the number of Trumpanzees up to an easily manageable sum. The rough estimate is that the number of people who voted for Post is around 25.6 million people. So we'll round that up, since it's past 0.5, we will round that up to 26 million really, really bizarre Americans. 26 million. Now, if I say that half of his voters are racists, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, skinheads, Klansmen, bigots, homophobes, xenophobes of one sort or another, then what I am essentially saying is that 13 million out of 330 million people in the United States are as I described them. In other words, less than 5% of America. You got a problem with that? I mean, it's not, you know, you talking to me. No. Do you have a problem with that? Does it seem to you, knowing what we have lived through for the last 8 years, all the examples of the racism that is just all over this country, do you find it difficult to believe that there are 13 million racists in this country? 13 million bigots. We're talking of all stripe here. Now, I'm not saying 13 million Klansmen. That's a different inquiry. But 13 million people who ascribe to one or more of the nasty things which we are finding out the Trumpanzees favor. And we have found out they favor. Is that it, so we don't have, I mean, if you take issue with my theory that half of the people who voted for Donald Trump are, again, racists, bigots, homophobes, religious zealots, misogynists, people who want to meddle inside women's reproductive parts, people who hate Mexicans, people who hate Hispanics, people who hate Asians, people who hate Jews, Okay? Is 13 million people really too large a number? I mean, I think we had a general agreement during the 8 years in which it seemed like the Republican Party wanted, and I mean, we did agree on this, that the Republican Party generally didn't want to do anything so much as just stand in the will of the Senate and the House and yell that word with the N, the R, the E, the two G's, and the I that isn't ginger. Out of 330 million, 13 million is around 3% of the population. Do you think that 3% of the people in this country still use the word nigger? You can't really? We can't fathom that there are that many people in this country that do that? I mean, of the people in this country with their various hatreds, are there 13 million people who despise Jews? I'm pretty sure there are. Who despise Latinos? Pretty sure there are. People of color, generally? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the empirical data is beginning to pile up. And it's coming from strange places that you wouldn't otherwise expect. Well, maybe you would. Like Spokane, Washington. Where, according to the Spokane Spokesman Review, staff showed up they showed up this morning at the Martin Luther King Jr. Family Outreach Center to find their building had been spray painted with the word nigger. Now, of course, you know, and now we've gotten to the point where when a photo is taken of it, they put a black box around the rest of the word except for the N and the S. Our buddy the Angry Indian tells me Spokane is full of neo-Nazis. Okay. So, with a story like this, we go, oh, yeah, definitely. But what? So we can't connect those people to people who voted for Trump? Do we think the neo-Nazis in Spokane all had I'm with her signs in the front yard? Huh? What's Edith? Huh? So we don't think that half the people who voted for Trump are, you know, filled with vile hatreds, but we don't have a problem understanding that, you know, the development director of the executive director of the Clay Development Corporation, we don't have a problem understanding that she's a racist when she calls Michelle Obama an ape in heels. But, you know, she's just up there in Little Clay County. It's a little tiny town. It's 25 miles from Charleston, but by God, it takes an hour to travel those 25 miles. Because it's out of the way, Clay. And, yeah, so those people, yeah. But I'm sure she didn't go and actually vote in the election. And, yes, she's out of a job now. She'll be rehired when the heat's off. The mayor of Clay, who said, "Pam, you just made my day," has resigned. The the woman who was the development corporation director, she said, as you may recall from last night, that she had been that she had become, by virtue of those words, that they were just words, she had become a victim of hate crime. Huh. Yeah. What? Somebody burned something in her yard over that? No. No, people just made plain how disgusting her conduct was and what a disgusting human being she must be. You know, maybe she's nice outwardly. Well, hi, yes, yes, thank you for calling the Clay Development Corporation. Yeah, we want to help develop clay. Yes, we do. God bless America. God bless you. Bless your heart. But down inside her is a core of nastiness, a core of hatred, a core of racism. But somehow or another, we have a hard time believing that she's part of the half, the deplorable half of the people who voted for Donald Trump. You know, roughly 6% of Americans voted for Donald Trump. Something like that. And we can't believe that 3% of them are just like the woman in clay or whomever it was that spray painted nigger on the MLK Family Outreach Center in Spokane. Right. We can't, no. Or, you know, we can't believe that portion of people would include, say, oh, I don't know, a guy by the name of Larry Heefner in Billings, Montana. He's got something. He owns something called the Coffee Tavern. Because having seen a video, and I've seen it too, it went viral, of some black kids apparently attacking a white guy, Larry Heefner, in his outrage, wrote, "These fucking monkeys would be hanging if I saw this shit. You don't see white people do this shit." Larry Heefner also said in regard to the election, "If Trump wins the election, it'll be the first time in history that a billionaire moves into public housing vacated by a black family." Ho, ho, ho. I tell you, I don't know. That's a real knee slapper right there. First public housing. See, them Obamas turned the White House into nasty old projects. And earlier in writing about Hillary Clinton, Larry Heefner wrote, "She needs fucked with a bat right up her liberal fucking ass." And then speaking on behalf of his business, "The Coffee Tavern will never recognize a murdering whore for president. Don't like it? Keep the fuck out. We don't tolerate scum." And, of course, once it became widely known what he'd done, he said, "Well, you know, I was just kind of upset. That's not me." The people that know me know I'm not like that. I just hope that this community can overlook the stupid comments I made because, you know, I don't want to be economically punished for suggesting that a woman should be raped with a baseball bat. So, you know, we've got that. Yeah, Asa, maybe that's it. Trumpansies is not racist. You're just a self-hating white man. Oh, are we there yet, Daddy? Yeah. You're right. Thank you, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn, Jeremy says. "The stupid is strong with these evil neo-Nazi racist fascist bastards." Oh, but see, half of the Trump voters can't possibly be this way. 13 million out of 26 million can't be. No, impossible. Unpossible. I mean, so, you know, I mean, he's an outlier. He's a, he's not at all exemplary of the people who went and voted to make America great again. And neither, of course, are the people who went and hung little black sculptures from trees at Winthrop University. Nope. Nah, I couldn't possibly. No, no, couldn't. No, just no. Those people are not emblematic of the people who were just economically anxious and consequently were driven to spray paint an Episcopal church in Talibandiana with a swastika and the words fag church and the words Heil Trump. They're just economically anxious, okay? It's just like people were economically anxious in Lincoln, New Hampshire. Where one woman said, you know, she had she and her family waited while other people who got there later at the restaurant, people who got there after them were seated while she and her family were left standing there for 20 minutes and more. We waited another 15 minutes and a party of six walked through the door, the woman wrote. The waitress walked right up to them and seated them. I said, we've been here waiting over 20 minutes total, just us. She rolled her eyes and walked away. That was our cue to leave. The restaurant, of course, says, no, 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 it's not that they weren't seated because they were black. A party of three arrived, and there were no tables for their size available. A party of two arrived after them, then a party of six, all of who were waiting for tables to be available. A party of two opened up, so the party of two was seated. Then a table of six opened, so the six was seated. The hostess was disorganized with the wait list. So, you know, of course that, no, that wasn't, I mean, no, of course not. Because, you know, these things happen. It goes on and on and on. But that's the question. Do you really have such a hard time coming to grips with the idea that there are 13 million people in a country of 330 million who still ascribe to vicious, pernicious, hateful, nasty variations and versions of bigotry? What about the folks who were partying in, sorry, Darlene, East Windsor, Connecticut? Not East Windsor, Alabama, no. East Windsor, Connecticut. Wearing KKK garb, described in the news story as a costume. Another wearing a Make America Great Again, a MAGA hat. Yeah, that's a word now, I'm sorry. Stafford, Connecticut State Police, it was first believed it was filmed in Stafford, but the state police spokesperson, Trooper Kelly Grant, said it was taken in East Windsor. East Windsor First Selectman Robert Maynard said, from what I could tell, they were just reacting to the election. They were just having a party. You know, with a person in a Klan costume who was not told to leave. Who was not told that that's inappropriate, that that is a manifestation of disgusting hate. No, was not told that, no. I'm sure it's just, it's just an anomaly. Or how about over at the Student Activity Center at The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio? A structure, a building, a facility called The Union. Where an individual, well, let's see if we can go to the video. Or audio, rather.
Hey, you don't love to compromise.
Idiot! Hey, old boy!
So the young man was standing on some stairs with a bullhorn, megaphone, addressing a crowd of people with signs, when another guy came, you heard what he was saying, you don't have to compromise, blah, blah, blah. And a guy attacks him from behind, white guy, and screams, "You idiot," and shoves him down the stairs. In the story, no mention of any charges being filed for, like, attempted murder. You know, when you shove somebody down the stairs, that really kind of is attempted murder. But, half of Trump's voters, they're not like that. I mean, so here's the question. If it's not half his voters, what if it's a third of his voters? Let's see, 26 to 3 and 8. And, that's 24, 6 and 4 is 2, 28 and, So, maybe that's, 8 million Americans who are racists, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, fascists, xenophobes, homophobes, misogynists, Christians. What if it's only 8 million? What if it's only 6? That would be 20. That would be around 25% of Trump's voters. What if 25% of Trump's voters are racists? 6 million. What if it's 10%? What if it's 2.6 million people? What then? Well, I'll tell you what then. In that event, it still means that if you voted for Donald Trump, you got under the sheets and you're still there. And for as long as that man is in that office, you're part of the problem. It means that during the course of a campaign, you saw him mock a disabled person, and you voted for him anyway. It means that during the campaign, you saw him call women disgusting and pigs, and mock precious right-wing journalist Megyn Kelly for menstruating. And you voted for him anyway. It means you heard the whole grab him by the pussy speech and voted for him anyway. It means you heard him say that 11 million people in this country need to be rounded up and driven from this land and voted for him anyway. And that's not even a tiny percentage of the overall list of the atrocious, abhorrent things that the Trumpansies voted for. And yeah, if you've still voted for him and you knew all those things and you decided to overlook it, I'm going to keep using the term Trumpansie. Or I don't, well, you know, they're just economically anxious. Maybe we should call them Trumplings. Precious little Trumplings. Here's a note coming from Ron in the freezing and then thawing north. My daughter lives in California. She's gay, in a very loving relationship with a wonderful woman with two young children, and she is feeling very traumatized and afraid for her family with all the Trumpanistas gaining steam. She feels like she has a target on her back. She misses Canada in ways that are visceral and hard to explain. I had to remind her that while her memories of Canada are valid, we're not immune to the alt-right messaging up here. The current leader in the Conservative Party's quest to replace Stephen Harper has proposed that all potential immigrants to Canada should have to take and pass a test on real Canadian values. Did I mention that this candidate is a female from Toronto and third generation rich? Yeah. Thank you. Ron says you're coming through loud and clear, and it sounds like you're a bit hoarse this evening. Perfect form for kicking ass and taking names. Well, well, thank you very kindly. I try. So, let's consider... Okay, yeah, that Jack in Shreveport, I like that. Trump Clansies? Yeah. Just to put a little bow on this inquiry, those may seem like small numbers. I mean, 13 million is actually more than half of Trump's voters. But we're just trying to deal with round numbers here. But what if... Well, what if it were a fact that some of the states that Trump won and Hillary Clinton lost? What if it was a fact that they were lost by the narrowest of margins? Not hundreds of thousands, but tens of thousands. Scant tens of thousands. like Wisconsin. What if that were the case? Well, would having a vicious, hate-filled, vitriolic, highly motivated activist base of racists, bigots, xenophobes, homophobes, misogynists, could that provide the tipping point? Yes? Yes, yes, it could? Ha-ha! I think we have an answer. I do believe we have an answer. And so consequently, I don't expect anytime soon to disavow my assertion that roughly one in two people who voted for Trump did so while at the same time manifesting some form of bigotry and prejudice. And the other thing I tried to get across last night, and if you have to deal with Trumpansies, I encourage you to sort of surreptitiously do this. 5-minute rule. Talk to one for 5 minutes. You know, be gentle, be kind of neutral, be kind of bland. And just kind of listen actively. And see how long it takes before they'll say something like, "But those blacks, ... or "those homos." Or use another, around here we don't call, they don't use words like homos or homosexuals or lesbians. They use the more tried and tested epithets that we know and I don't like to use. You know, faggots, queers. In less than 5 minutes' time, the average Trumpansie will manifest to you, and you won't even have to push them to it, some kind of hate. And just one of these kinds of hate will be sufficient to motivate. Do it for yourself. It doesn't take long at all. Usually it doesn't even take the whole 5 minutes. One minute they're all just kind of, I like him and he's going to make America great again. And then boom, and he's going to put those people in their place. It doesn't take very long at all. Here, let's take a look at some headlines approved by Racist Bannon, the incoming chief of policy for Post. He was the editor. That things went past him, and he, yep, that's cool, over at that website that rhymes with light and fart. Here's one of the headlines that he approved. Would you rather your child had feminism or cancer? Bill Kristol, Republican spoiler, renegade Jew. Lesbian bridezilla's bully bridal shop owner over religious beliefs. Teenage boys with tits. Here's my problem with Ghostbusters. And right about the same time that 9 people were murdered at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina, he approved this headline, "Hoist it high and proud. The Confederate flag proclaims a glorious heritage." There's no hiring bias against women in tech. They just suck at interviews. Pamela Geller's Muhammad cartoon contest is no different from Selma. Gabby Giffords, the gun control movement's human shield. Birth control makes women unattractive and crazy. The solution to online harassment is simple. Women should log off. Roger Stone, Clinton aide Huma Abedin, most likely a Saudi spy. But no. Half of Trump's voters couldn't possibly all be racists and bigots and misogynists. And I mean, they don't all go over to Breitbart or Stormfront. Yeah, over at Stormfront, they're all upset again. Remember how I mentioned last night that New Balance shoes that they got behind Trump, and therefore there will never be another pair of New Balance shoes in this home. Yeah. Well, this goes back to Matt LeBreton. Matt LeBreton is vice president of affairs at New Balance, and he publicly came out in support of Post. This pissed people off. There are videos of people throwing away their New Balance shoes, people setting fire to their New Balance shoes. Hint, don't do that. All kinds of toxic, noxious fumes come off of that when you do it. Enter Andrew Anglin, Anglin. He's a neo-Nazi and a white supremacist. He's also a, how should I put it? He's a Trump voter, of course. But it couldn't possibly be half of Trump voters are like him. No. No matter how much empirical data we pile up to suggest that that's likely, not possible. Well, when news reached Andrew Anglin about Matt LeBreton's endorsement of Trump, Matt LeBreton said, "The Obama administration turned a deaf ear to us, and frankly, with President-elect Trump, we feel things are going to move in the right direction." Yeah, okay. Well, this thrilled Andrew Anglin. And Andrew Anglin said, "New Balance is making a gesture to support white people and to support U.S. manufacturing. We need to support that. I see New Balance is now becoming the official shoes of white people." And having caught themselves up in a real damn problem, the PR department at New Balance suddenly went into sweat condition alpha. "New Balance does not tolerate bigotry or hate in any form. One of our officials was recently asked to comment on a trade policy that was taken out of context. As a 110-year-old company with 5 factories in the U.S. and thousands of employees worldwide from all races, genders, cultures, and sexual orientations, New Balance is a values-driven organization and culture that believes in humanity, integrity, community, and mutual respect for people around the world. We have been and always will be committed to manufacturing in the United States, Sieg Heil." Backspace. Okay, got okay. So the Sieg Heil didn't go out. And now Andrew Anglin is mad. Andrew Anglin said that what I just read to you is obviously fake. Over at Stormfront, he said that the Breton statement, the original statement about, you know, how awesome it's going to be to have Trump as president, was sent directly to the Daily Stormer, and quote, and this is important, as said he believes all Jews should be gassed for real this time around. According to Andrew Anglin, this is the original statement. New Balance endorses bigotry and hate in any form. As a 110-year-old company with five factories in the U.S. and thousands of white male employees worldwide, New Balance is a Republican-driven organization and culture that believes in white supremacy, integrity, community, and mutual respect for white males around the world. One of our officials was recently asked to comment on trade policy and was quoted correctly in context. We have been and will always remain committed to manufacturing jobs in the United States. Don't let the lying Jewish media get you down.
What?
So, apparently, Matt LeBreton got down and wallowed in the filth and got up with a whole bunch of Nazi all over him. Stuff is, it's that stuff doesn't rub off easily. Oops. Yeah. Oops. Note coming from Brother Deacon Gerald of the Building and Grounds Committee. In other news, and hey, at least it's good news, developers of the proposed Mountain Valley Pipeline cannot survey land for the project without the permission of the landowners, the West Virginia Supreme Court ruled on Tuesday. Justice Robin Jean Davis, writing for the majority, said there was no proof that the MVP project would serve any public use, a requirement under state law for developers to use eminent domain to force landowners to allow such surveys. Thus, this case represents exactly the type of private taking for private use that is prohibited, Davis wrote in a 31-page opinion.
Well, it's pretty clear to me that Robin Jean Davis doesn't want to make America great again.
Yeah, right? Sure. So, I mean, I just wanted to sort of clear the air of that whole, you know, why I think the way I think. And I think my theory is sound. Especially when you get down on that micro level, where the difference between victory and defeat can be measured in a clavern's worth of Klansmen. So the Trumpansies are just going to have to deal with it. Just as I said with Brexit. No, everybody who voted for Brexit. What the fuck? Everybody who voted for Brexit was not a racist. But you achieved your goal in a narrowly contested race because racists put you over the top. Or whatever word you want to use besides racists. Xenophobes. People who voted on a motivation that arose from some degree of hate. And by the same token, that's how you get president, well, post. That's how you get post in the White House. And if we do not make them wear that, if we do not make them own that, then it begins to rub off a little on us, doesn't it? If we pretend that they were just poor souls, the little Trumplings were just economically anxious, and it just made them go out and spray paint Heil Trump on a church, or burn a church down, or it just motivated a woman to tell her students that their parents need to be deported and they're all going to be in foster care. Yeah, I don't want to be of any part of normalizing that. The goddamn for-profit media are already doing more than ample work normalizing the abnormal. As I said last night, Trump normalized hate, and now the for-profit media are normalizing Trump. And this is not normal, and I'm not okay. This evening, I'm going to add another sound effect, I hope, to our to the stuff here in the studio. When I go to pick up Margie at Hellmart, I'm going to go and buy me a kazoo. And I'm going to use the kazoo from time to time to play Kumbaya. You know, every time we get a story about the for-profit media normalizing all of this filth. Just kind of seems like the right thing to do. So the question persists. How do we formulate a resistance? What does it look like? What does it sound like? Where does it begin? While I respect the protests that are going on, and will not stand in any sort of judgment as to what needs to be done when or how or whatever, it's not all the strategy, it's not everything. I mean, hell, little steps in your non-New Balance shoes, like writing to New Balance and telling them, okay, so you've disavowed the Nazi guy's statement, but your vice president of affairs still endorsed Donald Trump. For that reason, I will never purchase a pair of New Balance shoes. And I will tell others of like mind and similar spirit and encourage them to never buy another pair of New Balance shoes. Is that a problem? We have to look at this economically, we have to look at this politically, we have to look at this socially. At least that's my thinking. Before we go to the break, a few notes. Earlier in the day, based on Andy's call, and Andy will not like this, but it's the discussion that we're having. Terrace writes, subject line, Andy from California, the call last night. I'm sure you received emails and other forms of feedback regarding Andy's comments about immigrants taking good-paying jobs. That's spelled J-A-W-B-S, so that's why I said it that way. And yes, yes, I have. Terrace says, having grown up in a red part of California, chink and beaner were the go-to slurs. Slut was probably the number one, though. You know how good Christians are. The answer to low wages always has been and always will be to organize. We all know the Republicans are the problem. Open borders, if we had them, aren't the problem. Fascism is. Divide and conquer will never cease being their favorite game. Union bashing, offshoring, and automation have made them quite wealthy and powerful. The more people they put out of work, the more they blame the Democrats. Even rich liberals support automation. Houses will eventually be 3D printed. Andy said we need jobs. Is there a job factory? Should we pray for that? Andy's welcome to contact me about cleaning my house. I pay well. Better than my rate as a software engineer, in fact. Come on over, white people. Scrub my toilets. Although he didn't know, it's just to scrub my toilets. Because I'm pretty sure, and I get the gist of what Terrace is saying here, I'm pretty sure that there is not a line of economically anxious poor little white people every morning waiting to go and pick lettuce at piece rates. Or tomatoes. Or any of the other back-breaking stuff that we are more than happy to have done by immigrants in this country, regardless of their status, as long as we can bitch about them every once in a while, taking all the good jobs. No, it's not all the work they do. They do. They swab toilets. They work as staff in hotels. And curiously, there's white folks aren't out there trying to get those jobs. What it really boils down to is that these aggrieved people want jobs that don't exist anymore. Like I said, it was kind of weird to me the last time that I was in Alabama. I drove across the river to where my father worked the best part of his career. And you know what it is? It's an empty place. Those two silicon furnaces were packed up. Well, they were dismantled, packed up. And, no, really, shipped to China. And, well, they're not coming back. And no amount of dumping on undocumented immigrants is going to make them come back. That's just a fact. More mail. Subject line, talk to them for 5 minutes? No way, Bob. I already know what those people are. They are all, yes, all, either racist, homophobic, misogynistic, evil, greedy, stupid, or ignorant. But I've been saying this about Republicans for as long as I can remember. I dare you to find me a Republican who is aptly described, who is not aptly, I presume not. I think Kim left out the word not. I dare you to find me a Republican who is not aptly described by one of those descriptives. Kim in New Jersey. Steve in New York, a member of the fraternity of Steve. Immigrants, delivery people for carryout restaurants, for supermarkets, parking attendants, grocery stock people, and usually more than one. Two, three jobs. Yeah. Tracy with a note. Subject line, New Balance. So does the NB on New Balance shoes actually mean no blacks? Steve, another member of the fraternity of Steve. Subject line, end game. Says the worst of it is the Republican Party is synonymous with a politics of complete lack of principle. And the unprincipled player can always turn the mirror of principle, true or false, on the opposition. An entire generation knows this, even unconsciously. We, the principled side, are left without an option to get down and dirty with our true principles or our sense for survival. We are painted into the corner of playing by the rules, being fair, looking for the consensus. Tough game in a nation that's always practiced the dirtiest and bloodiest brand of empire building. Hail Caesar. Regards, Steve, in China. Hail Caesar, indeed. And I was thinking earlier, because, you know, the Trumpansies. Nobody, the people, you know, the Kumbaya Kazoo Chorus, the Kumbaya Kazoo Choir, doesn't like that word. But I will remind you that Saul Alinsky in Rules for Radicals said that one of our most potent tools is ridicule. And until I have some sort of affirmative proof that the Trumpansies are disavowing all the things the man stands for that they voted for, all the things that he endorsed in order to motivate and activate and weaponize that margin of hatred sufficient to propel him to victory, I'm not going to leave it. I'm not going to stop using the word Trumpansy. Because, among other things, they have flung poo all over us. What else? Ron and Raleigh, heading for the abyss on the double. I heard today that Mary Jo White is stepping down as chairman of the SEC at the end of the Obama administration. The name floated as her replacement is Jeb Hensarling. This SOB has never seen a regulation that he likes. So, after the recent Wall Street flameout, Post is about to put a fox in charge of the hen house. As far as a resistance is concerned, I wish Mr. Stress was still among us. I'm sure he would have a lot to say about World War II France, where you had the choice between joining the Vichy or the Resistance. I, for one, will join the Resistance. The Kumbaya Progressives will join the Vichy. I say fuck 'em. Signed, Ron, in Raleigh. Stephen Vermont says, Nantucket sleigh ride to fascism. I sent these your way. Robert Reich concluded that there's a contagion effect of the fascist plague that takes us away from humanity. Not Robert Reich, Wilhelm Reich. You think the end justifies the means, however vile? I tell you, the end is the means by which you achieve it. Today's step is tomorrow's life. Great ends cannot be attained by base means. You proved that in all your social upheavals. The meanness and inhumanity of the means makes you mean and inhuman and makes the end unattainable. From Listen, Little Man. This from Children of the Future on the Prevention of Sexual Pathology. We live in a community of people not so that we can suppress and dominate each other or make each other miserable, but so that we can better and more reliably satisfy all life's healthy needs. Again, from Listen, Little Man. Those who are truly alive are kindly and unsuspecting in their human relationships and consequently endangered under present conditions. They assume that others think and act generously, kindly, and helpfully in accordance with the laws of life. This natural attitude, fundamental to healthy children as well as primitive man, inevitably represents a great danger in the struggle for a rational way of life as long as the emotional plague subsists. Because the plague-ridden impute their own manner of thinking and acting to their fellow men. A kindly man believes that all men are kindly, while one infected with the plague believes that all men lie and cheat and are hungry for power. In such a situation, the living are at an obvious disadvantage. When they give to the plague-ridden, they are sucked dry and then ridiculed or betrayed. That, by God, is something to chew on. So here we are at the close of the filibobster. Note coming from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. I was kept awake all last night by the sound of jackboots. Anyone else have that problem? Yeah, I know. So, this is conversation radio, of course. And you're invited to participate in the conversation. I welcome you. I encourage you. We've got the Green News Report coming up. And in that time, perhaps we can line up the conversation. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178, 304-663-4676. And Skype to Skype, from anywhere on earth, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. And you can reach me on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid, Facebook, Bob Kincaid. You know, a pattern begins to emerge. Note coming from Ron. Here's an aside from the frozen north. Played golf on Sunday with the temp around 60. I'm scheduled to play golf next Saturday with a predicted high of around 60. We're driving to Vermont on Sunday through wet snow, with more snow predicted on Monday and Tuesday. C'est la vie. Or perhaps, say, climate change. And just remember, we're going to ignore climate change for the next 4 years. Or maybe we're going to... we're not going to ignore it. We're going to promote it. David writes in and says, the only objection I have for the term Trumpansy is the insult to chimpanzees. I understand. That's why I didn't say Trump nobos. I respect bonobos. Chimpanzees often become quite violent, vicious to each other and to, well, yeah, you get the idea. Steve in China. Tried to get some day labor outside of Sacramento years ago, hoeing beets for a few bucks. Me and a couple of white guys thought it would be some easy work. Nope. They were real nice people, gave us dinner that night and let us get a bed for the night, but they told us they couldn't use us. We didn't have the real experience required to do farm work. Backbreaking, dirty, sweaty work. Working man and woman's and children's work. God bless those beautiful immigrants. And a humbling experience for a city boy. Yes, indeed. I can imagine it was humbling. Kind of like the summer I spent doing roofing work. I ran back to college that fall because I knew I could not survive. If that was my job. So, we'll take a break. Bob in Texas $100 challenge is still on the table. and has still been unresponded to. Please let's not let a kindness like a $100 challenge just blow by. Whether it's $5 or $10, however, don't miss an opportunity to get your money doubled. So, forward we go. By the way, if you prefer the U.S. Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. All right, break time. Light them up. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Children, why do we build the wall? Why do we build the wall? We build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build a wall to keep us free. How does the wall keep us free? My children, how does the wall keep us free? How does the wall keep us free? The wall keeps out the enemy. And we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. Who do we call the enemy? My children, who do we call the enemy? Who do we call the enemy? The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy, and we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall, we build a wall to keep us free. Because we have and they have not, my children, because they want what we have got. Because we have and they have not, cause they want what we have got. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy. And we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. My children, what do we have that they should want? What do we have that they should want? We have a wall to work upon. We have work and they have none. And our work is never done. My children, and the war is never won. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy. And we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. We build a wall to keep us free.
It's Tuesday, November 15th, 2016.
Hopefully it's a reminder that elections matter, and voting counts.
Green News Report special coverage. President Obama speaks to the election of Donald Trump to the office of president and what it means for the environment, his legacy, and the world. From BradBlog.com, I'm Desi Doyen. Brad Friedman is out sick today. Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and, since Brad is out sick, not a whole lot of snarky comment.
reality has a way of asserting itself.
You said it, Mr. President. This is your Green News Report. Well, the world is still reeling from the surprise election of Donald Trump to the office of President of the United States, with environmental groups and the renewable energy sector bracing for major fights ahead to preserve progress on clean energy jobs, clean air, clean water, and climate action. On Monday, President Obama spoke at length in the White House press briefing room about his landmark environmental policies and his hopes that those policies will continue under the next administration. From new mileage standards for cars and trucks and the booming renewable energy industry to his emissions standards for U.S. power plants known as the Clean Power Plan, a crucial pillar of the U.S. commitment to the historic United Nations Paris Agreement, the international accord to keep global temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius.
There's been a lot of talk about the possibility of undoing this international agreement. Now, you've got 200 countries that have signed up for this thing. And the good news is that what we've been able to show over the last 5, 6, 8 years is that it's possible to grow the economy really fast and possible to bring down carbon emissions as well. It's not just a bunch of rules that we've set up. You've got utilities that are putting in solar panels and creating jobs. You've got the big three automakers who have seen record sales and are overachieving on the fuel efficiency standards that we set. Turns out that people like not having to fill up as often and save money at the pump, even if it's good for the environment. You've got states like California that have been moving forward on a clean energy agenda, separate and apart from any federal regulations that have been put forward. In fact, 40% of the country already lives under in states that are actively pursuing what's embodied in the Paris Agreement and the Clean Power Plant rule. And even states like Texas that, you know, politically tend to oppose me, you've seen huge increases in wind power and solar power. And you've got some of the country's biggest companies like Google and Walmart all pursuing energy efficiency because it's good for their bottom line. So what we've been able to do is to embed a lot of these practices into how our economy works. And it's made our economy more efficient. It's helped the bottom line of folks, and it's cleaned up the environment. What the Paris Agreement now does is say to China and India and other countries that are potentially polluting, come on board. Let's work together so you guys do the same thing. And the biggest threat when it comes to climate change and pollution isn't going to come from us, because we only have 300 million people. It's going to come from China with over a billion people and India with over a billion people. And if they are pursuing the same kinds of strategies that we did before we became more aware of the environment, then our kids will be choked off. And so, again, do I think that this new administration will make some changes? Absolutely. But these international agreements, the tradition has been that you carry them forward across administrations, particularly if, once you actually examine them, it turns out that they're doing good for us and binding other countries into behavior that will help us.
That was an extended excerpt of President Obama's remarks in a White House press briefing on Monday, speaking to his hopes that his environmental policies, which have been successful even in red states like Texas, will continue in the next administration, and on the crucial ongoing efforts to fight climate change and transform our energy system, both internationally and at home. For much more on this and other stories we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can always download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Follow us on Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. Both Brad and I will be back in our next episode with more green news and the fight to keep moving forward. Hey, it's only the planet at stake. From BradBlog.com, I'm Desi Doyen, and this has been your Green News Report.
And I rise up, I rise like the day.
We're almost halfway through the program. $100 challenge on the table. And, chance to double your money and help keep the horn going, help keep us on the air, keep the bills paid. Just got a note from Arnold. Some Facebook photos. He noted 7 miles from my house. It's an SUV, black. Festooned with American flags, and on the back, proud right-wing Catholic, good versus scum, the battle has begun, pick a side, Trump-Pence. Then, on the side of that vehicle, fuck that fat dyke's stronger together bullshit, divided we stand, the better we'll be. I'm sure that is nothing but economic anxiety. Aren't you? Let's run over and check in with Scott and Punky out in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob or Rebop. How are you doing?
Setting them up, knocking them down.
Okay. Let me preface this, and I'll try to make this whole thing brief because sometimes it seems pointless even to call. I even anticipated and constructed an email that I was going to send, and I even had a title for it, Who Forged These Chains? And I know you don't like reading. I would like to read directly from A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, and then converse, working from a few notes that I've made just to keep my points cogent and clear. If that's okay.
As long as it's not pages and pages and pages of Dickens. He got paid by the letter.
I know. Okay, this is from A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And the overall theme here is who forged these chains? Okay. You are fettered, said Scrooge, trembling. Tell me why. I wear the chains I forged in life, replied the ghost. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Okay, now you may find yourself asking, what is your point? How is it relevant? Okay, here's my take. By defining one's universe solely or even primarily on the basis of actions, of obviously irretrievably stupid actions by people, I think you might be creating a harmfully false notion of the overall state of things. Now, is this to say such nonsense should be condoned or worse yet, ignored? No, of course not. Only a fool would say that it is. Still, in my estimation, what I hear happening here, it shows up for me as a way of encumbering yourself and the rest of us. It seems to me to be unwise to continually leave such a limited and false impression with people. That kind of thing doesn't really differ significantly from the rhetoric and tactics that Trump himself employed in order to get elected. Now, on the positive side, I agree wholeheartedly with previous observations that you've made on previous shows that to continue to operate in an endless campaign cycle is counterproductive. And I do sincerely and happily anticipate an eventual shift in emphasis from problem defining to solution finding. I'm someone who opposes Trump, believe it or not, and I know there is some doubt out there in the minds and hearts of some of the fun lovers and truth seekers in Hornville. I do oppose Trump, but it seems to me pointless to continue to engage in a futile activity of employing sarcasm, irony, and name-calling against Trump and his supporters. It had no discernible effect on the outcome of the recent election, and it seems obvious that the solution does not lie in that approach. So what then? Okay, here's a clue. I think a good first step is to begin constructively participating in the process of creating a world that works for us all. And that's pretty much my epistle, and now let the conversation commence. I say these things with a heavy heart, Bob, because I love your show. I love you as a human being. I love what you're up to, which is why I when something rings, not falsely, but badly or maybe not bestly for me, I feel it's my duty as a human being who's interested in good outcomes to bring it up so that we can talk about it and you can show me, you know, if there's an error in my thinking and my understanding and my listening.
I don't know that I can do that. I can only do here what I know how to do, Scott. And at this point in the process, I am very much concerned that I not participate in any way in normalizing what others are trying to normalize. If that constitutes me forging chains for myself, I guess I'm going to hammer on. And maybe that's not a sufficient answer.
Can I comment quickly?
Well, give me just a minute. There's something I want to share. I want to share with you because Carol just sent this over to me, and it says, what I'm arguing in far more succinct and perhaps effective terms. This is a post from Facebook. Not all Trump supporters are racist, misogynist, xenophobes. All Trump supporters saw a racist, misogynist, xenophobe and said, this is an acceptable person to lead our country. You may not have racist, misogynist, xenophobic intent, but you have had racist, misogynist, xenophobic impact. Impact is greater than intent. So when you get called racist, misogynist, and xenophobic, understand that your actions have enabled racism, misogyny, and xenophobia in the highest halls of our federal government, regardless of why you voted for him. That makes a lot of sense to me. And toward that end, Scott, if we do not criticize, if we do not ridicule this man and the people who empowered him, what then do we do? Do we simply say, oh gosh, they're misguided? And maybe they'll come to their senses. Well, you know, part of me says that they'll come to their senses, but I'm also enough of a realist. You know, scratch a pessimist, and you'll find a broken-hearted romantic. But I'm enough of a realist to say that yes, they'll learn, and as the old saying goes, when the belly rumbles, the head learns. There are dark days ahead. There's no getting around it. This is not the 8 years of the Obama administration where you had stasis because one branch of government was controlled by one party and the other branch was controlled by the other. And the third branch sort of seesawed back and forth. This is not that. This is a rabid horse with the bit in its teeth. The barn burnt to the ground and the horse in full gallop. And we're not even to the inaugural yet. People are angry. I'm angry. People are hurt. I'm hurt. People are scared. And if I, as a 53-year-old, privileged, pasty-faced, doughy white guy, am scared, then I can only imagine what it must be like to be an undocumented immigrant in this country, trying to get enough sleep at night to get up and carry this economy on their backs every day. So, you know, most of what I do here is to, in the context of commentary, present news stories. Stories of what's happening in this country. And Scott, what's happening in this country is not okay. I haven't seen the number today. I imagine it's probably up past 200 now of incidents of racial violence, misogyny, etc. So, you know, until more things gel, I think between now and the inaugural, it's okay if we're angry. And it's okay if we call out the people who enabled this viciousness to be turned loose in the country. For 8 years, Scott, it was, you know, it was kept bubbling at a high simmer, but the lid was on. The lid's off now. And we really don't know what we don't know what the world we're living in is going to look like. So that's just all off the cuff. I mean, there were points along the way that I would have maybe stopped and responded to one thing or another that you said, but that's just, you know, that's just an off the cuff response. So go.
Okay. All right. And I do get that. You are not raising points that are invalid. I really truly do get them. But it seems to be so far an endless, seemingly endless litany of bad shit that's occurring, perpetrated by irretrievably stupid people. And it's what it reminds me of, and don't take this the wrong way, but it reminds me, or take it the way you need to take it, but take it. Okay, it reminds me for years in the press, especially press that had to do with media, there was an ongoing litany of how all-powerful and overwhelming Rush Limbaugh's radio show was, and maybe still is seen to be. But if you dig a little deeper, you find that on an average week, his weekly audience is in the range of 12 to 13 million people. That is to say, 12 or 13 million people tune into that asshat, okay, to listen to whatever he has to say, whatever his particular rant is. But step back a couple of paces, and you'll see that even 12 to 13 million people in the grand scheme of things compared to something like 315 million American occupants is not a, I mean, it's a sizable number, but yeah, 12 or 13 million people listen to that fool, but how many other hundreds of millions of people maybe don't even know he exists, much less anything that he's saying? It seems that it would, the prudent thing to do once we've stopped being angry and upset and sad and afraid is to look at, I mean, because granted, you don't want to normalize what's going on, and I get that, and I agree with it. But at the same time, what is, and what ain't. And when I talk about the notion of acceptance, I speak my speaking is this. Acceptance is not surrender. It's not giving up. It can be compared to the "you are here" sign at the mall. It has no power.
Wait a minute, Scott.
No power in the matter. It only serves to instruct you as to where you are currently, and therefore sort of give broad outlines of the space which you will then operate in for who and what and how might be next. Does that make sense?
I get all of that. I really do. I mean, I'm not denying reality. I think maybe we are arguing, and I use the word arguing not in the pejorative sense, but as in presenting, you know, debate, as in presenting points. I think we're arguing past each other. Because okay. I'm not arguing in favor of pretending that anything is what it isn't. And no, I take your point about And I have, in fact, talked about it in the past, maybe it goes back to a time before you were part of the community. But, you know, the number of people who watch Bill O'Reilly every night, because at one time he was, I presume still is, the single most watched cable TV news program, which sounds really like something, doesn't it?
Oh, sure, if you don't know.
If you don't know the number of people who tune in to SpongeBob SquarePants.
or Honey Boo Boo. Remember Honey Boo Boo?
Yeah, but in I mean, the case with SpongeBob SquarePants is real and actual. Every night, Bill O'Reilly gets buried or got buried by SpongeBob SquarePants. It's a fact. And so I get that aspect of your argument. But on the other hand, in an election where the margin was 29,000 votes for the whole basket of electoral college votes, to wit, I think Wisconsin, then having an activist base of people who are motivated by their hatreds, even if it's only 13 million out of 330, which works out to like 3%, it's enough to get the job done. And I think the Trump campaign understood that far better than anyone else did.
Yeah.
And so consequently, there's cover for the people who voted for him to say, well, yeah, that woman in Clay, I mean, you know, but she's an outlier. Outliers vote too, Scott.
Yeah, and I get that. I don't deny any of that. Did you happen to see Bernie Sanders last night on either Charlie Rose's PBS show or on Colbert's CBS late night show?
No, I did not.
Okay, Bernie said something last night. He said a lot of good things. Well, one of the good things he said has also been said by Hillary and also been said by President Obama. And that is, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's a pretty close paraphrase. Bernie said to Colbert and to Charlie Rose last night, I'll work with these people to the extent that they are working for stuff that I can support, and I will oppose them vehemently when they're proposing things that I cannot and will not support. And that seems to me good marching orders.
That's a rational perspective. Sure,
yeah,
it is.
But it seems to be a good way to proceed for us now, once we've gotten past our upset and our anger and our fear, if we ever do. See, that's my fear, is that we stay stuck in this endless campaign thing, and you know we plow four more years of gridlock regarding good stuff on top of the 8 years we've already had that the Republicans cooked up on inauguration night in 2009. See, that scares the hell out of me, because by then it becomes 12 years that nothing of great consequence gets done on a regular basis. And that to me is the biggest problem that this country faces, that the shit that not only can we not get worthwhile stuff done, but now we look at the scenario of good stuff, what little of it that there is that has been done recently and in years past will then be undone. And we can't just sit and name call and be sarcastic and ironic for the next 4 years. Even Punky says so.
No, I heard. I mean, I take Punky deadly in earnest.
Have you noticed that he has been strangely quiet up until now?
Yeah, he has.
Since the election? Birds are not stupid. He can probably pick up on my vibe.
Have you ever lived somewhere that tornadoes come?
Oh yes, Cincinnati.
Yeah, you ever seen it? Have you ever noticed what birds do when the shit's about to hit the fan? They get away.
Definitely.
And it gets really, really unearthly quiet. All the chirping, the singing, gone.
Yeah.
Let me back up to a point you raised, and then I'm going to let the conversation continue because we got a bunch of people calling in.
Okay, that's great.
I appreciate what Bernie said, and I support Bernie. I have never stopped supporting Bernie. Just one thing, one second. And frankly, what he's saying makes political sense, Scott, but it makes political sense in a context where they don't need him. Okay? As of January 20th, as I've said before, they own this. They've got every vote they need to pass everything they want in the House of Representatives. There's a little bit of a joker in the deck relative to the filibuster in the Senate. The Senate rules have to be adopted with the new Congress. If there's still a filibuster, it will be available, but the first time it gets used, Chinless Mitch, and I hope it's okay if I call him Chinless Mitch, because the man does not have a chin, Scott.
No, I, for years, have called him Bert the Turtle in that old civil defense
back
and cover cartoon.
But the first minute that the word filibuster is whispered, Chinless Mitch will slap them down a rat hole. Because he's proven himself quite adept at doing that over the course of the last 8 years now, hasn't he?
Well, yes, he has, but that
and so and so there's and so there's nothing really for Democrats to cooperate on. Because they aren't needed. They're not necessary. They're bystanders. The 60-vote majority that it required to pass any legislation in the Senate when Chinless Mitch was in the minority is gone now. Okay, that's not going to hold. And, you know, it's like my senator, Joe Manchin, saying, well, I think Donald Trump would do well to listen to the moderate Democrats, and I think he will. That's hogwash, Scott. I know, because Joe Manchin is a hogwash merchant. I mean, this
it,
is...
It runs in his family.
Yes. So, realistically speaking, I mean, the stuff where Democrats can cooperate is actually a pretty finite list. The cooperation they will want is in the way of helping them gut Social Security, helping them gut Medicare. And
Bernie has gone on record even before last night saying that he will oppose that.
Exactly.
He will enlist all the people he can to oppose
right.
that sort of thing.
Now, things like continuing resolutions, you know, what was said earlier about us being painted into a corner is kind of true. The Democrats are the responsible party. The Democrats, you know, and it's fundamental and it's philosophical. The Democrats believe in the idea of a federal government. The Republicans do not. And I think if we proceed without acknowledging that, then everything that flows from it is false.
Yeah, and I do acknowledge that. And another thing, and I know you want to go, but quickly, I know from having grown up in the D.C. area and watched politics all my life, pretty much, that between the branches of government, the executive and the legislative branch, particularly in federal government, there is always, has always been, and will always be, a power play and a turf war between the two branches. And I can't help but wonder if perhaps some of the Republicans in Congress, at least in the Senate, might provide a little bit of pushback, maybe even a lot of bit of pushback, if Trump lets himself go to his own head, if you get my meaning.
Well, I do, but I don't think there's much of a, you know, what's past is prologue, Shakespeare said. And I don't think we've got a lot of a history to look back on in terms of them, of Democrats in the wilderness being much good at stopping much of anything. Bless their hearts.
I'm talking about the Republicans providing pushback. Because these jazzbos have to be elected again, too. You know?
Well, in the Senate, their majority's mostly safe because only 9 of them are up in 18. And there we are, we're back in the permanent campaign mode again. But right. Scott, I got to get out of here. I got people waiting.
Okay, man, go ahead.
All right, later. Bye now.
See ya.
Scott always manages to get some pushback. Kim in New Jersey says, I can't do the acceptance thing that Scott suggests. Those of us who have bullseyes on our backs and will be impacted in real and measurable ways in the very near future find it hard to swallow his plea for acceptance. I will resist till the day I die. Obama, Hillary, and the like are calling now to work with Trump. Easy for them to say, their lives will in no measurable way be adversely affected by the coming apocalypse. They will fucking reach across the aisle and sell us all down the river. I'm not in on that. Meanwhile, James says, toward Scott's point, we are now to be about the business of dealing with this government as it is presented to us. It's the journey of 10,000 miles. Time to start stepping. Make the point to any one of them, who will talk to you about jobs. Make the point that even if I'm wrong about climate change, the world is with me. Are you, Trump supporter, not willing to help me try and crush the Chinese in the manufacture of solar panels, windmills, and modern high-capacity batteries? That's a good argument. That's a good line of argument. I admit, James and Scott, I am skeptical of the willingness of the whatever the never Trump rump of the Republican Party is to prevent much of anything. And remember, the other side is very good at not collaborating, and they put they put targets on the backs of anybody they so much as catch shaking hands with a Democrat. And those Republicans live in near constant fear. So, you know, I think it, and like I said, maybe Scott and I are arguing past each other or across each other. But I also think, I think there's stuff coming that we haven't even begun to contemplate. I posted an article from The Guardian over the weekend and implored people to both read it and share it, not because I wanted something I said shared, but because I wanted people to get a handle on what we on what we're facing. And it's written by a historian, an anthropologist, and an archaeologist, all rolled into one. And he talks about the tiny things that happen that roll up into giant bleeding disasters. So that and he uses as one of his points of departure the murder of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and says, you know, nobody across all those godforsaken alliances and treaties and cross treaties expected that would wind up slaughtering millions of human beings, but it did. And he talks about the Black Death, the plague of the 14th century. Go on down. If I could remember the title, I would just tell you, and you could go to The Guardian and find it. It's actually an article from back in June. But it is well worth your time to read it. If you scroll down my Facebook page, you'll find it. Shouldn't be too awfully far down, because I think I posted it maybe Saturday or something. Hell, that was a million years ago, wasn't it? Let's run over to the Skype line and talk with our buddy the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry.
Hey, what's up, man?
I'm here. You there?
Yeah, it's been a while. We already know what the fuck happened, so let's push. Yeah, I heard Scott. That's how we got into this position in the first place. This is how a discussion we had the last time. White liberals are not going to say to themselves, well, you know, my uncle, I love him. I know he's a bigot, but he's not all that bad. He's a nice guy. So, you know, Abby, you know, why can't you just accept that my uncle just doesn't like black people and that he thinks Jews are stealing his money and just have dinner with us on Sunday and just not give a fuck? And if he says something, just ignore it. And it's like, no, why should I? Why the fuck should I? You know, when I know for a fact that this man used to assault people when he was, you know, in his 20s and 30s and so on, you know, went all through the fucking Navy, was a complete bigot, refused to work with black sailors and shit in the fucking Navy, came out, was a complete goddamn asshole, treated his wife badly, you know, continued to fucking, you know, and, but the defense was, well, he never joined the Klan. He never joined the John Birch Society. He stayed in his church. And, you know, when black people needed money, he gave up a dollar. So, you know, they're not all that bad. If we wait a while, they'll come around to it. And, you know, they'll figure out that they were wrong. And we'll be able to fix something. But we can't panic. The only thing that he said that was right on was not to panic. Because we've seen this before. You know, when Ronald Reagan came around, we saw this. That's exactly why he got in. The same thing happened with fucking Bush, 2000, 2004. Both of those elections were funny. Electoral College gave it to the Republicans twice. And then, you know, Republicans, every time they leave office, they leave under a cloud. So,
well, they leave under a cloud, and they also leave having looted the Treasury.
They loot the Treasury. They start fucking wars that they don't get goddamn finished. They don't fix the fucking infrastructure. They hand everything off to the fucking business community. I mean, the last time the Republicans were in, and the DNC never talked about this. The establishment DNC, anyway, never talked about this. Bush crashed the entire world's motherfucking economy with the subprime loan scandal. Banks crashed in Europe because of this. We still don't know where the WMDs. You know, has anybody answered for any of this? No.
No.
And everyone, you know, it's all selective memory. Well, Hillary's a crook. Yeah, Hillary's a crook, but compared to whom? Trump? Really? This is somebody who demanded to see Obama's birth certificate, but he won't show his goddamn taxes because he didn't pay any. You know, I mean, he's in federal goddamn court filings connected to the mafia in two countries, the United States and goddamn Russia. But, you know, we'll talk about George Soros all fucking day long.
Yeah, right. Well, because he's the devil. How is it relatively ineffectual rich liberals wind up being the devil, and the devil never is? I mean, is it because, and again, I go back to my assertion about the Trump voters, is it because they get some nice raw red racist bigoted, homophobic, xenophobic, misogynist meat thrown to them, and so that makes them happy, so they look past everything else? And then everybody else says, well, you know, I mean, he says those things, but I want to make America great again, too. I mean, we have to understand the total Trump dynamic if we're going to get anywhere, Angry.
Yeah, but it really isn't a Trump dynamic. This is an American fucking dynamic.
Okay,
it's
point.
It's a settler dynamic.
Yeah, point taken. Score. Absolutely. Yeah, no
you
problem.
Know, he just
yeah.
simply took advantage of what the fuck was already out there. You know, none of this was new. He was rehashing really old propaganda material from the fucking far right that has been circulating on the dark web for a couple of decades. And then some young hipsters got into this. And you can, you know, anyone can look at my goddamn Twitter feed today. I put up a lot of these videos. You got 19 and 21 year olds with long hair, very fucking effeminate. And I'm going to say this since we're talking about, you know, a macho America, really pussy fucking voices, really sound like punks, like David Duke. Like Larry Klayman, you know, like all of them. You know, I mean, Alex Jones sounds like a fucking punk ass.
Yeah, and what a lovely thing for Trump to agree to go on the Alex Jones program.
Well, he's got to say thank you to his motherfucking foot soldiers. That's who won it for him. That's who won it for. Just like I said, I got video here from YouTube. This isn't my goddamn material. This is material that other people have put out there. All I'm doing is fucking putting it so people can fucking look at it. This cat is supposed to be 19. He's speaking to someone from the Young Turks. And he's going on this entire fucking spiel about how slavery was beneficial to black people, how Jim Crow was good for black people, and how we're going to want this. We're actually going to be begging Trump for it if we give Trump a chance. Because that's the only way we've ever, you know, achieved in the United States was under slavery. So, you know, Trump, you know, represents Jim Crow. Well, we already knew that. But this is a 19-year-old. This is a young fucking white American who normally would have the shit beat out of him by neo-Nazis for having long hair, for being fucking effeminate, for having a fucking, you know, tight-ass goddamn voice. But Milo Gano, whatever the fuck his name is, the British Greek alt-right leader who got
Milo, yeah.
Yeah, I can't pronounce his name and I don't give a fuck, you know. So, whatever his name is, it's been said to him face to face. You would have been sent to the fucking camps just like any other gay person in Nazi Germany. He's like, well, maybe. But I also kind of would have deserved it. But, you know, but maybe not, because they could see my brilliance and they wouldn't send me. Which is what I was telling you about before. You know, in different ways, the entire time you and I have been engaging online. When you see black and Latino and homosexual people who are backing somebody like Trump, the idea is lynch them, not me. Lynch them, not me. I've been hearing...
Yeah, look what was the number, Angry? 30% of the Latino vote went to Trump?
Something like that, and I'm not surprised by that. I've been insulted by Mexicans at my goddamn kitchen table telling me how bad blacks are and how stupid blacks are, and I said, that's pretty funny. You just came in here 2 weeks ago bitching about something that your supervisor said. Well, that's different. I'm not black. I'm Latino, and I have a college education. I said, well, I got a college fucking education, and you know, you're telling me that people like me are not really fucking up to your goddamn standard, even though I know you came in here fucking illegally. You know, he had a chance to go to school while he was undocumented. He had a fucking chance to, I should say this. He was working for a motherfucking, how can I forget that goddamn name? Denny's, because I don't fucking eat there. I don't eat there because a group of black Secret Service fucking agents under Clinton went there and they refused to fucking serve them. And yeah, I still got a fucking bone in my goddamn throat about that shit. But yeah, he started working at goddamn Denny's, undocumented, going to motherfucking college. He's doing okay now. He's gay. He married a white guy. He's got a house with a fucking pool. And now he's legal. And he wants to send every fucking buddy else back. He wants to send everybody back. Every fucking buddy. And it's like, well, what about you? Oh, well, you know, I'm different because I'm just different. I'm smarter than the others. So I deserve this. You'll hear black fucking fucks say the same shit. Jesse Lee Peterson, well, I'm better than the average Negro. Sheriff Clark, I'm better than the average Negro. Alan West, and you know, Negro.
Alan West, Ben Carson, Herb Cain, sure.
Herb Cain, Azalea Banks, the rapper, she's 100% behind Trump. She voted for Trump. She stumped for Trump. She's supposed to be, you know, fuck all white people, but she backed Trump, right? The Nation of Islam supported Trump. Mike Tyson supported Trump. Terrell Owens supported Trump. The Rock supported Trump.
Jesus.
All of these Negroes supported Trump. You got a whole bunch of gay people that supported Trump. And now some of them...
Well, and yeah, chief among them, Peter Thiel. You know, the man who funded the Gawker lawsuit. So
yeah, but see, he was down with that whole thing anyway, and said that he made it very clear. I want to help this whole thing because, well, I want that kind of goddamn power. I mean, what do we see?
Well, he's got.
I'm doing already.
He's got a vengeance agenda. Nice quote just came in from Carol Baker to share from Naomi Schulman. Nice people made the best Nazis. My mom grew up next to them. They got along, refused to make waves, looked the other way when things got ugly, and focused on happier things than politics. They were lovely people who turned their heads as their neighbors were dragged away. You know who weren't nice people? Resistors. So, I mean, you are in a different, but not entirely different place from where I am angry. There have been, you know, there have been protest marches. The Portland PD declared one of those to be a riot so that the cops could themselves, in turn, I guess, riot.
Yeah, because somebody got shot. Anti-Trump person got shot.
Yeah. So the question, I mean, I'm asking this question not rhetorically, and not because I'm hard up for material. I want to know from people, because America has never been through straight up full on fascism before. We've toyed with it. We've played footsie with it.
Well, white Americans haven't.
Yeah. Okay.
Jim Crow is fascism.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely, it is. And you know that's coming back, if it ever went completely away. So the question becomes one of, the conversation with Scott was like, what does resistance look like? What I'm still figuring out what I mean when I say no collaboration. Because I'm just operating from history, angry. I know what happens to collaborators when fascist regimes fall. And they fall hard. So, you know, are you getting a sense where you are of what the resistance feels like? Is it just going to be people in the streets for 4 years? And I don't mean, when I say just, I don't mean to minimize. But are you getting a sense of any shape? Is anything beginning to take form?
Well, there's supposed to be a J20 hashtag J20 general strike, and if everybody could fucking do that, that would be fantastic. I mean, if you go on Democracy Now, you know, I think I've talked about this before. I have a friend who's in his he's 97, no, 96 now. But a couple of years ago, we got into a bit of a disagreement because he says, you know, people don't protest here very much, you know. And I'm like, people protest. And he goes, well, outside the United States, nobody can protest at all. And here, there's really no need for it. So I showed him Democracy Now. 3 days worth of Democracy Now. The millions in Europe, South America, Asia, right? Just over the past few days, they're out in the streets. Here, you're lucky if you get 7,000. In some places, you're lucky if you get 400. And if protesting doesn't mean anything anyway, when you have George Bush saying, well, you know, before the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, that, well, I'm not going to be swayed by protesters. That's a quote. So it kind of makes sense then that all you're doing when you're protesting is, okay, you're making your voice heard, but that's about it. It's not going to actually change anything. Now, when we start talking about, well, what should people really do besides doing something stupid? Well, it usually comes to the fucking thing that you see going on outside of the United States. You get your motherfucking selves together. You get fucking organized. You get goddamn lawyers. And you really start going the fuck to work. And you start promoting your own fucking media. You know, every political party outside of the United States has a fucking radio station, at least one. An official organ, an official fucking newspaper, news service, something. The DNC, what the fuck was that about? You know, and I ask people, what's the official organ? You know, they can't tell me. The Vatican has a fucking news service. Does the DNC have a news service? No. But we all fucking were complaining about Fox and MSNBC and such and so on. Well, if you know they're not going to report the fucking news, report your goddamn own news. One of the reasons why he fucking won, they're talking about leading a lot of this shit to Facebook because, you know, Breitbart came around and the memes and the whole nonsense about the alt-right, which is really just the same old fucking neo-Nazis, just younger. You know, they took over the goddamn social media. Twitter could not sell, it was reported not too long ago, because of the amount of motherfucking hate speech on Twitter. Nobody wants to buy it. They actually lowered Twitter's goddamn stock. They're inundating these goddamn systems. And Twitter doesn't really do so much about it. Facebook doesn't do so much about it. You just had a Microsoft bot that turned racist within, what, 3 days? 3 hours, whatever it was?
Yeah.
It just picked up all and, the negativity.
And, I mean, Jesus, they turn a cartoon frog into, a messenger of right-wing hate.
Yeah, but this is what I'm talking about. And, again, I'm not trying to rehash anything, but we've had conversations leading up to this about the same sort of thing. This is, what you're criticizing Scott about is the same thing that fucking has been going on all the goddamn time, whether it's Jim Crow in the past or the fucking shit we're looking at right now. Because the guy who created Pepe the fucking Frog, you can go online and look this up. He says that it's unfortunate that it's become part of this alt-right thing, but he's not upset about it and not alarmed about it because it's just a reflection of common values and what's going on in modern America. And if it makes people laugh, then it doesn't really mean anything to him. It'll just be something else later on. So that's not somebody... But he's saying, well, wait a minute. You know, this shit is connected to a lot of fucking hate, a lot of goddamn misogyny. There's a whole lot of fucking, xenophobia. And I don't want my creation attached to this. And I denounce every fucking thing that the alt-right is about. He refused to do that. So that makes him part of the motherfucking problem. Now, there's a famous fucking case that movie was done on the accused of a group of men in a fucking pub who watched a woman being sexually assaulted. They kept drinking their goddamn beer. I believe it was upstate New York. It's been a long time since I've seen that film. They were eventually found guilty for not trying to stop this, for not trying to intercede, for not even calling the goddamn 911. They didn't even tell these motherfuckers to stop. So we have to stop giving a pass to people who are being passive about this and saying, well, he's connected to the Klan, the oldest terrorist organization in the United States fucking history. They've been illegal since the fucking second and third anti-Klan acts, which, Republicans talk a lot about the Klan being hooked up with the fucking Democrats, but if they hate Democrats so much and hate racism so much, how come the Republicans have not gone after the goddamn Klan?
Well, there's that, and something that occurred to me earlier today, Angry. Every time you talk about the Klan and Republicans and racism, they immediately scream, yeah, but Robert Byrd.
Whatever. Robert Byrd spoke against the goddamn Klan in later years, not just apologized for it, actually fucking tried to work against it.
Yeah.
And said that he was getting resistance when he was trying to fucking find Republicans that would fucking stand with him on that shit.
Right. But the larger point, or the point that I went to from that is, so Byrd can never be forgiven for joining the Klan when he was a young man. But on the other hand, if you point out Klan connections to the Republican Party and to Trump, I mean, let's remember, this man with his own tiny little thumbs tweeted out white supremacist articles, white supremacist memes, neo-Nazi stuff, blah, 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 blah. If you point that out, well, those people, I'm not like them. But, if you get under the sheet, you're under the sheet, aren't you?
Yeah, but people like to fucking play games on how far under the goddamn sheet. Now, again, I'm not saying, that Scott necessarily thinks like this. But white people need to fucking ask themselves, when you really look at who the fuck voted for him, and we can really, make a big brush and say, yeah, well, all these uneducated white men and these, these white women, quite a few of them fucking liberals and so on, and so many Latinos and quite a number of fucking African people. Nobody's really sure about Indians because Indians don't really count, right? So, nobody's really sure, even though I know there's quite a few goddamn Native Republicans who did fucking vote for Trump. Knowing that he's connected to the Dakota Access Pipeline directly, this has already been goddamn exposed. And, it doesn't really fucking matter. The idea is, I know they're not coming after me, so I don't have that same gut fucking fear. I just don't. They're not coming after me. I know they're talking this shit. Maybe it'll be 4 years. We'll have to put up with some really nasty people. But in essence, I know they're not coming after me. So I can talk shit about, well, we can wait in every goddamn thing. Just like, I'm told that I should be able to come over to Sunday dinner and excuse the fucking fact that even though this man was never a member of the fucking Klan, He supports the fucking Klan and used to beat the shit out of fucking minorities when he was a young man. And no, I'm not going to sit there thinking about, oh, well, you know, some kind of, you know, retribution type shit. I don't want to associate with any fucking buddy who used to think like that. Now, you mentioned Robert Byrd. Robert Byrd, many decades ago, before his fucking death, said, look, I was totally wrong. And really, the answer that he gave, I remember arguing with a lot of black people at the time. It's like, wait a minute. You know, if you were Nazi youth, you didn't know what the fuck you were doing. You were sent where the fuck your parents told you to go. And with the Klan, it was the same goddamn thing. You know, I've spoken to men who were in the fucking Klan. And I can say that. Who said, yeah, when I was fucking 12 and 13, my father and my uncle said, you're coming with us. And it was one of these goddamn meetings that they were having in the fucking South. And said that he did what the fuck he was told. That he never got involved in anything, this, that, the other. And when he left and went into the fucking military, went to Chicago, whatever the fuck, he just tried to forget that he had anything to do with that. But he said, it was a part of my background. I'm from Alabama. That's how we're fucking raised. White liberals, many white liberals, and this election shows it, not so much in their vote, but the way they're telling us to just relax about all this shit. In the midst of all this goddamn violence, churches being fucking burned, women being grabbed around the goddamn country. There are people being fucking assaulted. I know there's that one video running around of some white man being assaulted by some young black people.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's been tons of other goddamn things happening. You know, kids, young fucking Americans dancing around in made up, you know, Klan shit. And we're being told to not worry about this. I mean, the fucking New York Times, there's a clipping that's running around, and I hope you saw it in my feed. Right after, you know, in the 30s, right after Hitler won, saying, well, you know, everybody just needs to relax because he can't possibly enact what he's talking about. He doesn't seem to be all that bad. We need to just, you know, chill out and give him a break and see what happens. And it's like, you know, you got to be fucking kidding. I mean, and even Oprah Winfrey is talking that bullshit.
Yeah, you know, I didn't need that. I mean, I don't pay any attention to Oprah, but I didn't need that. Well, hey, I got a little audio here you might find interesting, Angry. This is a recorded argument between a black woman and her white boyfriend. Apparently, the relationship was not going to end well. And she just turned, you know, just turned on the recorder and let him go. So, you know, hockey pucks, standard warnings apply. This is not nice. Here we go. Just making America great again.
Let you get the fuck out. You know what? That's what Trump should do. The second he's elected, give all you motherfuckers your tickets back. You don't like it? Peace! Black Lives Matter, go matter the fucking Ghana. Go dig for fucking diamonds over there. Have fun.
You do realize you sound like a racist, right?
Maddie, I don't care. You want to know why? Because I'm not up there saying white lives matter. White lives come to the front. Black lives go to the back. I'm just like, hey, what's up? How you doing? But when you want to come at me with your fucking black lives matter and this, that, and the other thing, and the white people need to go to the back because white black people always had to go to the back, and now the white people need to do it. Fuck your black ass. Get the fuck out. Get out of my country. You're causing the fucking problem. Bye.
I never said any of that.
Here's your ticket back to motherfucking Nigeria. Peace out.
I never said any of that.
You'll notice, Angry, that is not a Georgia, Alabama, or Mississippi accent.
Mm-mm.
That's Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, just like the attacks taking place in California. But there's, you know, this is countrywide. And they really do, you know, they've got the bit in their teeth. This is their moment. This is what they've been waiting for. This is what great-grandfathers told grandfathers, told fathers, told sons was eventually going to be the new and glorious morning in America. And you know, it's like a South Park style graphic I saw on my buddy Joy's page. It said, it just showed this kind of guy with a bemused look on his face, and he said, "And I'm going to give Trump a chance." And he just appointed a white supremacist to his cabinet. I mean, Steve Bannon, goddamn.
You know, Scott's still listening. You know, it's easy to say, you can reason with somebody that votes for the Klan and doesn't give a fuck about the fact that they voted for somebody that is down with the Klan, that has neo-Nazis on their goddamn thing. Now, he's just put up Steve Bannon. So, really, anybody that's going to tell anybody of color to fucking chill the fuck out when they created a position for Steve Bannon, this special advisor bullshit. They made a job for this motherfucker. Because the party itself, the real goddamn politicians who know how government goddamn functions, like, you can't do this. It's bad enough you got fucking elected. You can't do this. So they had to put in Rince Priebus. They had to put in somebody seeing goddamn legitimate who does understand the fucking machine. Steve Bannon isn't going up there to run government. Steve Bannon over there is going up there to fucking figure out how they can come up with their version of the final fucking solution. Because that's exactly what his goddamn website says. That's exactly what his fucking website is about. That's exactly what his 19 to 24-year-old motherfucking hipster Nazi fans are about. They know nothing about World War II. They know nothing about what happened during the European Holocaust and don't give a shit. As you just said, this is their time to fucking feel better than somebody. Because when you look at these motherfuckers sitting around jacking off the Japanese anime while they're talking about white supremacy, you know, while they go to the Philippines looking for wives and shit while they're talking about white supremacy. Okay, you know, these inadequate motherfucking white males who are sitting around upset all fucking day because they feel that they should be a king. And that, you know, somebody like Obama, somebody... of color who makes fucking money, somebody who has an education, who has something going for their goddamn selves, doesn't fucking deserve it. I'm supposed to fucking have it. So they come up with all kinds of fucking excuses. And a lot of our liberal friends do the same thing. It isn't as bad as you're talking about, Abby. What are you talking about, man? It isn't that bad. You know, and it's like, this was up to a week before the fucking election. I don't see all the hate you're talking about. Or what? Because it's not happening right on our block, right? But you want to talk to me about Russia. And that's a situation we can talk about. Why does the American left all of a sudden give a fuck about Russia? Uniting with the American...
I got nothing. I've seen a particular instance where anytime somebody says anything critical of Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, there's an individual and it's not just one individual, it's a thing, as you just identified it, where, you know, at all costs will defend a man who supports death squads that go around killing gay people in Russia. But, you know, is it because he gave asylum to Ed Snowden? Is that it?
For a lot of them, that's all they see, because that's all they want to see. That's all they're interested in. Their world is the internet.
I mean, she's irrelevant and everything, but she's irrelevant and everything. But why did Jill Stein feel the need to go over and play footsie with him?
She was always playing footsie with him. And see, there were a lot of people who are now trying to play with me, you know, on people of color who are like, oh, well, you know, I wasn't always down with Jill Stein. Yeah, the fuck you were. You were mocking me for fucking supporting Bernie. You know, yes, you were. And then, you know, when I said I wouldn't support Hillary, so they're like, oh, well, you have to support Stein. I'm like, I don't have to support any goddamn buddy because none of these motherfuckers represent indigenous interests. Not one of them. And now they're trying to play it off like I wasn't always down with Stein. I'm like, fuck out of here. She talked positively about Trump from the fucking beginning, saying that he wasn't nearly as bad as Hillary Clinton. That's exactly what the fuck she said. It wasn't anything new. It's just people started listening, you know, right before the fucking election took place, because they started paying attention to things that they weren't looking at before. But she had been saying that. Her and Gary Johnson both defaulted to fucking Trump. Like I knew they goddamn would. Like I knew they fucking would. I mean, Roseanne Barr is part of the fucking Green Party. So how liberal can the goddamn Green Party be? They talk about progressive shit because just like the alt-right, just like these, you know, really far-left extremists, to the point where they're going so fucking far-left, they run into the right. You know, they're pro-gay, But then they waffle on gay marriage and shit. And then what it is, you know, I have told people there's always been an element of the white homosexual community, at least in my experience in the United States, that has been pro-fucking neo-Nazi, pro-racist. It has always fucking been there. One of their leaders was actually in Germany. His name was Michael Kunin. He died, I forget, like more than 20 years ago. Actually died from AIDS. But, you know, he would swing them away from going after gay people. He was swing their violence away from gay people to minorities. And there really weren't even that many goddamn minorities in Germany at the time. But he made life hell for them. And when he came out as homosexual, you know, the larger movement set him aside. But now with this whole thing with the alt-right, the only thing that makes them, you know, alternative is the fact that they're willing to take, you know, homosexuals, in the case of Frank Collin, pedophiles who consider themselves to be pagans. You know, they bring in people with this Thor religion bullshit, you know, neo-paganism, where they take bits and pieces of Native American shit, Celtic religion, and Thule.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's fucking insane. I mean, you know, these are the guys that you see on YouTube crying about what Europeans were in North America first, and we got the sultry and fucking arrowhead, and they're sobbing, talking about how white people have been robbed of their heritage and all this type of shit. Well, how did you actually get over? Well, we came over the ice pack. Bullshit. You know what I mean? This is what they're going to be teaching in schools, Brother Bob. I'm hearing about a white appreciation fucking holiday now in Texas again. They're talking this shit and how white people, Europeans, need to be given appreciation for founding America. Not for cleaning everybody out, though. Not for slavery. Because, you know, we'll take credit for ending slavery, but we won't take credit for doing fucking slavery. We'll take credit for, you know, pointing to our Native American paratroopers and shit during World War II and how we copped Geronimo and that's how we beat the Nazis. But we won't talk at all about how we put them in concentration camps and basically forced them to serve in the motherfucking U.S. military by threatening their families that if they didn't goddamn go, they would fucking hurt them. That's the same thing that happened to the Japanese. I've spoken to motherfucking men who were in the goddamn camps in Washington State. They said, yeah. They said if we didn't goddamn sign up, they were going to fuck us up. They were going to fuck us up. They were going to attack our mothers if we didn't motherfucking serve. See, the narrative later on became what we wanted to prove our Americanism. No, they were forced to goddamn go. And, you know, none of that history is going to be taught. You know, I mean, we got somebody, you know, Pence, who tried to pray away HIV, believes the earth is only 6,000 years old, and really suspects that it's flat, but that he can't prove.
Going to be interesting, Angry. Going to be really interesting.
It's already interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, if white folks don't start saying to themselves, I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but, you know, you voted for a Klansman. And that's exactly what you are. That's what you supported. And fucking, you know, it's not name calling. You're not name calling. You say, no, you voted for a fucking Nazi. You voted for somebody who fucking supports this shit. And what are you going to do, argue? Steve Bannon has a goddamn position in federal fucking government. How are they going to argue? Are they going to say that he loves Jews? He hates Jews. He hates minorities. This is documented. So how are they going to argue? How is somebody like Scott?
Well, here's you know, okay. Argue? So here, I mean, I've done some thinking about this, Angry. And it goes back to something I've been saying for quite some time. We make the mistake in this country of thinking that fascism has to have a certain look, has to have a certain appearance. You know, snazzy Hugo Boss uniforms, that kind of thing. Doesn't. And, you know, the old quote does apply, when fascism comes to America, it will come wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross. They will not, and by explanation, let me draw draw from a different historical context. Once upon a time in this country, and, you know, this is just because I know my region. Once upon a time in this country, if you tried to organize and you were a coal miner, they just killed your ass. And they got to. Well, they wised up with that stuff over time, and they put some velvet inside the shackles. And because they realized if you paid a man enough money, you could still abuse the hell out of him, but you would have a greater grasp over him by making sure that he was in debt. That's how Don Blankenship broke the UMWA back in the 80s, in the 90s. He paid the same money to his workers, and they didn't have any money coming out for, like, union dues and stuff. And you could actually make more money as a Massey miner, non-union. And so you could have, you know, you could get your wife new tanning bed bulbs every year, tanning bed itself, new four-wheeler, new double-wide, new truck every 5 years, hunting rifles. Life was good. Walmart was yours for the taking. And lo and behold, it was far more successful than just going and putting a bullet behind the ear of a union organizer. Well, I suspect that American Trump-style fascism will, unless it is really pressed, will have aspects of that. It will be, to use a phrase, a kinder, gentler fascism. But the thing is, it will be fascism just the same. And when they take Social Security, and when they take Medicare, and when they break the EPA into a thousand pieces, like JFK said he wanted to do with the CIA, nobody's going to notice an immediate impact. Okay, no one will notice an immediate impact, Angry. And I think that's important.
Because it will
be normalized and made acceptable.
Well, it's already like that. But, you know, I'm agreeing with you. But the thing about it is, it's going to be gradual and so on for white people. It's not gradual for the rest of us. It hasn't been gradual at all. And now it's a fucking tidal wave. The only thing that has not happened is that so far, no one has been killed. Now, the only people who actually have been killed have been police officers. There's been a fucking tear of white supremacists murdering police officers here over the past couple of fucking weeks. And if you notice, none of these goddamn White Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, Trump-supporting motherfucking MAGA types have said a fucking word about this.
Not a peep.
Because it's their own. And my larger point is, white liberals are not saying any goddamn thing. They're leaving it to the political fucking people. They're leaving it to the minorities and shit to pass this information on. When we just finished complaining, all of us, about how fucked up the news media is for not reporting these things. And see, you get a handful of fucking people who will, you know, make it damn near their life's mission to get this type of information out. But this is what I meant when I said that is not enough. You know, now the Nazis do not really, I mean, you know, the real fucking ones, the ones who are really, really serious about this shit, they're really a very small fucking number. But their influence is much larger than their actual physical numbers for the simple fact that they are operating, as Mao Zedong used to say, within a fucking sea that allows them to swim. If white people are not willing to fucking stop this shit in its fucking tracks, and they haven't been willing to stop it at all since this fucking Trump thing has been going on. I mean, for the most part, the most outspoken white people that I see around me, and I'm just speaking literally for where I am, because that is all I can fucking really vouch for, you know, or I'm going to be affected. So they've been saying something. But those folks who are telling me that they're liberal or progressive and were Hillary supporters, and who are telling me that the Klan is not really an issue, when was the last time they killed somebody? I'm like, are you really asking me that question? Go fucking look it up and see when was the last time they killed somebody. There's Klan violence all the goddamn time. What the fuck was Dylann Roof? You know, and it's like, wait a fucking minute. You know, and then it's like every little fucking thing is attached to, like I said, they talk about George Soros, who hasn't done anything other than try to fucking make money. He's a 100% goddamn capitalist, but he's Jewish, so, you know, automatically he's evil, so they have to say something. You know, they just whip up anything. It doesn't really fucking matter. Well, it's just Same thing with this. A lot of white people are given a pass. They're just whipping up any all kinds of excuse. Well, you know, I understand that there's hate out there. I understand that there's, you know, neo-Nazis and shit. But, I mean, it's really, it can't be that bad. So we're going to continue to stay in goddamn denial. You know, I mean, how many Jews got caught up in Germany and Poland who's like, well, I'm integrated. I'm Polish. I'm a German. I don't have to fucking go.
You know, I gotta go here in a minute, but let's remember something. Fascist regimes seldom govern by majorities. They achieve power by the barest pluralities, and they rely on the silence and non-participation of a whole lot of people. Just going to keep my head down. You know, all I want to do is go buy my groceries and my cheap shit at Walmart and, you know, whatever. But we're seeing, you know, we're caught up in what's going on here, Angry. But by the same token, France it could easily go to Marine Le Pen.
He's been on that cusp for decades.
The UK, I'm sorry, but, you know, Brexit, I won't retreat from the fact that it has a nasty fascist element to it. And, you know, we'll see what comes of that. They're on the march in Germany. We've discussed this. They're on the march around the world.
Well, the Philippines. Now,
right, and you know what's kind of terrifying is, once upon a time, well, it was Britain, it was the French Resistance, it was the Soviet Russians, and eventually us that stopped all that. Well, what happens when we're on the other side? I don't have an answer, Angry, but I've enjoyed the conversation. No, go ahead. What?
All right, you know, but what I wanted to say was, you know, ask yourself what people did during Jim Crow. Okay, you had the Underground Railroad, and those people were not considered to be good Americans until when?
God,
they're considered terrorists. John Brown was considered a terrorist, still considered a terrorist. But if he did what he did in another country. If he did what he did in Israel, let's say, he'd be a hero. And he would be taught about. He isn't. You know, we have a really serious twist on history here. When we say, okay, well, terrorism is bad, of course it's bad. But we're going to pick and choose which terrorisms we're going to, you know, give credit to. When we talk about what happened with Israel and how it became Israel, and we talk about the King David Hotel, why are we not asking those sorts of questions? Why are we not asking what white people were doing? You know, doing Jim Crow, doing the slavery period, doing the period that the Democrats were really the majority of the Klan and running around the South burning people out. That was all terrorism. It was all terrorism. But when you do that in the United States, it's not called terrorism. It's patriotism, right? It's holding on to the image of the South.
And there's, you know, there's one more risk that presents itself here, Angry, and that is that we will, what little resistance there is will fracture. And what I mean by that is that Muslims will worry about and attend to the attacks on Muslims. Women's groups will worry about and try to protect themselves against attacks on women. The gay community, likewise. The Hispanic community, likewise. When, in fact, the only way to really beat this back is for everybody to push back against all of it. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they don't fracture that way, but it is certainly a natural and human response to do.
Well, how can we not fracture like that when you have white liberals that are saying that people of color need to just, you know, relax. Obama said that, relax. You know, it's just another election. There's really nothing to chill out of. You know, I mean,
elections have consequences. That was the quote, wasn't it? Elections have consequences. I hope people have learned that. But the problem is the price is going to be paid, as has been said. You know, he's not going to pay the price. For all the talk about lock her up, they're not going to lock up Hillary. They're not going to try Hillary.
There's already talk about revolution behind that, because they're not going to do that. There's already talk about that, that they're going to make him do it. I'm like, really? How's that going to happen? Bush was allowed to walk, right?
There you go.
And there's nothing to charge her with anyway. Charge her with what?
The crime of being Hillary Clinton.
That's about it, which, you know, there's plenty that she did, but that's not one of them. Anyway, peace.
You have a good and angry. Take care. Bye now. The Angry Indian. Good to hear from him. Fundraising update. Quickly. Thank you very kindly to Frank. Frank, I really appreciate you jumping in. There's $80 remaining on Bob in Texas's $100 challenge. Hopefully that'll happen in the next 20 minutes or so. Now, let me see here. Let's go over to the stress line and see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? You're on. Let's see. And we've got Mark in Florida. Hey, Mark.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm okay. I still owe the audience an apology for using the wrong language I called a couple months ago concerning Donald Trump, referring to him in the strong language. So I do apologize if anybody's listening to me and recognizes my voice. I am sorry for the way that was presented, but that's not really how I meant it. And actually tonight, all the way up to this very second, Bob, we've had, clear contact on the phone, and are breaking up bad, but are you hearing me fine, Bob?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. I agree with, Angry Andy, and it's always fun and exciting to hear you two guys, communicate. I love it, like everybody else when he calls the show. You both are so well educated. On the subjects. I know a lot of the stuff that you talk about, but I don't know some of the details or the depth of things. I do know some depth of things, though, as well. And I'm a big fan of John Brown's, by the way. I think some of our perspectives, getting back to, and not to beat up on Scott, but, you know, California carried 65-35 was the breakdown. Blue vote, and whereas we come from other parts of the country, and he knows, he's lived in other parts of the country, but we are living in the South where it's 35 blue and you know 65 red. So where I'm also been a paid union organizer, and I also was a troublemaker before I was offered that job. So, but you know, they actually told I won't say that, but I was going to mention some union business, which I won't, but. I wanted to make a couple comments, and I'll hang up and listen to the people's response. But the people that are marching right now, I thank them. And some of these people that are so smart, they may have contributed to the loss of the election. But I think some of them are so smart and vindictive in their beliefs that they may even gone so far as to voted for Trump to bring this on. I know that sounds kind of kooky, but and a lot of folks maybe didn't even vote, whatever the breakdown is on the people marching. I don't think it's quite that high, and I don't think most of them are Hillary people. I think that there are people that know when Hillary Clinton said she was going to go along with the Iraq war that their lives are on the line, and that's why they're marching. We're talking about war right now. We're talking about war, and they're marching in advance of war. Can you still hear me, Bob?
Five by five.
So you know, I thank them because they've already seen I don't know if I read this, all politicians are calculating in their language and what they take to the public. I know that, and there's a political calculation and loss versus gain. I understand that. But Hillary made a mistake when she supported that war. She carried no redneck vote for supporting that war, and then Trump steals that message away, even though we on the left know he's lying. The people on the right don't even question either one of the subjects. As a matter of fact, I would say 80% of the Republicans that voted in the election all voted for Bush. Now, the numbers bear that out. He wanted that war before the Project for New American Century even showed up. O'Neill vouches for that in his book, which I didn't read, but that much I do know, the former Secretary Treasurer. So he said they wanted war 2 weeks in. They wanted war way before 9/11. So I just, that's what I'm saying. I think that she kind of messed with fire, and she lost the millennial vote. And that's who's going to lead us out of this. And I think that they're also the same folks that are protesting hatred and racism. So I've been kicked off Facebook so much that I had to walk away from it. But I get on CNN, has a running dialogue, kind of like your chat room, Bob. And I'm constantly using and have on Facebook as well the word Klan. So I think that's what it is. You're either motherfucking Klan or you're for America. And this isn't South Africa. This isn't with the, AFRI, KKA. This is the United States. We were the people that set ourselves apart by harmony eventually. This is what we brought to the world. That's about all I had. I think that the war in Iraq, the people protesting right now are protesting hatred, racism, and war, and they're doing it preemptively. And I would just share with Scott, I don't think he's a veteran, and you don't have to be a veteran to know this, but the best time to fight when you get captured is immediately, because that's when the enemy is the least prepared to handle you. So we're fighting back, and Scott might still wear the blue uniform, and again, I'm mentioning his name, not beating him up. Scott might still wear the blue uniform, but he is reminding me of General McClellan, who liked the uniform but refused to cross the bridge. I'm a fan of General Sherman's and General Grant's, and if the fucking rednecks, anything spins out of control in this country, I've said it publicly on Facebook, I know where I'm going to be, because when my daughter was about 14, I was the only white guy at the Martin Luther King slavery Freedom Memorial statue that's actually even dedicated possibly in the whole United States. And we had a white congressman there. He couldn't understand why I was standing and looking his direction with sunglasses on. It was bothering him. I wasn't kooky about it, but he couldn't understand why I was there. And it was driving him more crazy than being there, because, it's called the Negro Slave Memorial, and it's located, here in my spot of Florida. So, and I also took my daughter to see Angela Davis. I don't think she understood what Angela Davis was talking about, but I tried to at least get her to the plate because I grew up listening to Angela Davis and found her amazing. So, in any case, I just wanted to get those points out about the war and marching right now, and that's what I think we all need to be prepared to continue to do now for the next 14 days. It hasn't even been a fucking week since the election may have been stolen by paying Gary Johnson, Bill Weld, or whatever the dude's name is from Massachusetts, 2 days before Rachel Maddow, basically tells Rachel Maddow, I like Hillary Clinton. She's a professional. She's honest. I trust her. Bill Weld got cold feet. That's the last we've seen or heard, or will we hear from either one of the people. But Johnson, if you look at the numbers for all the northern states that swung that way, he wiped out people's chance to make a decision. You're either with the workers or the owners. And when you vote for the owners, don't get pissed at me when you lift your head up with chains around yourself. So that's where we're at, in my opinion. And it's time to march. And it's going to get seriously. Something big's going to break out. Japan, by the way, I just had a friend. He's college educated, former Marine. He just shared with me 2 nights ago, Bob. Japan has a number of people in some ministry where the majority of them are also nationalists. So this right wing movement is global, apparently, in perspective. So are people dropping back to their corners, preparing for something? I don't know, but I think Trump's dumb enough to let John Bolton run it right into the ground, and then take the fucking idiot from Arkansas, the young gum captain that was, did all these tours in Iraq doing bullshit.
Yeah, Tom Cotton.
Yes, putting that fucking goofball in charge of the Secretary of Defense kicks me. He's a big Israel guy. So something's shaping up. So is Bolton. Something's going to break. And just like George Bush Jr., everything they touch doesn't turn out well. So I think the two buck-toothed motherfucking boys that belong to Trump, I would grab them by the fucking back of their heads and say, "You're coming with me, motherfucker. That's how Marines operate. We'll walk and point together. You want this, bitch? Let's go. Let's go. That's how we fight. Let's go right up front." And it's not time to lay down. It's not time to acquiesce.
I think the boys should probably sign up toot sweet for at least the guard or the reserves, don't you?
Well, that's the active duty now, Bob. So yes, I totally support that, because you don't draw that pension until you're 59 and a half, and that all falls under. I know that's no surprise to yourself, but that's a Cheney design. That's the privatization of the military right in people's face, and in addition to the mandatory draft by having people go 2, 3, 4 times before you can get away from here. I think it's an 8-year contract now. So people can sign up for 4, but I think you have an 8-year obligation, and they won't, I started to call it the Lend-Lease program, but the deal where they won't let you walk away while the war is going on, they've got you. And so if you combine that and the National Guard actually constituting half of the people in harm's way, that's basically the privatization, and in any case, so I could go on and on. Yes, I think they should be, I think you should be National Guardsmen or active duty, some branch, but I would just say they would have to not only get their top secret clearances, they'd have to get a medical waiver for their ceramic teeth. So I'll leave you on that, Bob. I appreciate you being there every night for us, and I'm sorry I used that word. I don't feel that way.
Don't beat yourself up. Don't beat yourself up, my friend.
All right, brother. Have a good night and angry ending. Appreciate you calling the show back. We never stop thinking about you. And if we could get his website put somewhere on your page again, Bob, I can never find him on the internet for some reason. If you can announce it, I got shitty reception. So have a good night, y'all.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Mark. And as far as angry stuff is concerned, if he is still there, I'll ask. But we'll be talking again, and I'll get it. Angry does Twitter, so if you follow him, you will sooner or later, more likely sooner. Get links at The Angry Indian on Twitter. So it's 8 minutes. We've got 8 minutes to go in the program, and $80 to raise to meet Bob's challenge. Just to bring something to your attention, like I was talking with about New Balance, I had a note coming from Kim in New Jersey. He said, "Thanks for the heads up on New Balance. We recently used the services of a good plumber recommended to us by a liberal contractor that we've used in the past. Plumber was good, but turned out to be a Trumpansy. We'll not be having him back ever. I'd like to suggest that the Horn family members search out contractors or business people on various websites that are known to be dedicated to progressive causes." And I kind of like that idea, because that's a positive response as opposed to a negative. One website I found was gayusapages.com. I was able to identify both a local plumber and a local electrician, as I know I'm likely to need such services sometime in the future. I am so done with letting right-wingers into my life and providing them a livelihood with my hard-earned money. This is just my little way of coping with those fucking fascists. Kim in Blue, New Jersey. Thanks, Kim. Thank you very much. And pay attention to the hashtag GrabYourWallet. It's beginning to have an impact. Among other things, shoes.com. My God, how long did you, how long, that's got to be a really, really old website address. Shoes.com has dumped Trump. Shoes.com has dumped products sold, created by Ivanka Trump. There's a list out there you can get. This story is at Raw Story right now. Ivanka Trump brand. Major online fashion outlet drops Ivanka Trump brand because nobody wants to buy her shoes. There's a list of people who of companies that, you know, carry Trump products. It's a form of activism to, as the hashtag says, grab your wallet. Might be worth paying attention to. And one last thing. If you know somebody who works at Walmart, I do, please encourage them to download an app called Work It. W-O-R-K-I-T. Work It. Walmart is having a shit hemorrhage because that app is designed for people who work at Walmart to be able to network and find out what their rights are. Helps them organize for better wages, benefits even. Now, Walmart, being a filthy gang of liars, responded to the Work It app by instructing their workers not to download the app. In its warnings, the Walmart liars claimed that it would steal all their important personal information. Well, it doesn't do that at all. And in fact, the permissions required for the app to operate don't, it doesn't include location data, your contacts in your phone, or even photos. What it does, however, is using the IBM Watson AI chatbot, answers employee questions about company policies and worker rights. How about that? Now, here's an interesting thing. It was kind of outrageous the other night when I found out that the local Hellmart here had experienced, and now, you know, call me paranoid, but now it suddenly makes sense. They claim to have experienced a lot of thefts of Otter boxes and phones. And so they immediately demanded the right to search any and all employees leaving the building with no suspicion whatsoever. Having seen this story this evening about the Work It app, what better way to try to fumble around and find out if maybe one of your employees has it on his or her phone? Evil bastards. Evil bastards. So that's it. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Hope you'll join in. And look, let's grow the community. This is a safe space for conversation among liberals, progressives, people of goodwill. There will be no Trumpansies here. Spread the word. There's no place quite like this in terms of offering up the ability to converse on issues of your choosing. Spread the word. Let's grow this community. Let's help more people feel included. Let's beat back the despair and the isolation and the fear. We can do this. We really, really can. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Oh, thanks, Debbie, for, you know who you are, for jumping in on fundraising. That actually takes, I just saw that a minute ago, that actually takes our fundraising down to $30.
to go to match Bob's challenge. And hopefully more will follow. Thank you for spending your precious, finite time engaging in this conversation, even in silence. You're helping to make things better. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And thanks, Carol Baker. Carol Baker just finished off the fundraising. Thank you very kindly. So, time to get out of here. Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.